Hello and welcome to Savor. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lord Vogelbaum. And today we're talking about another restaurant chain. We're talking about Red Lobster.
That's right. Red Lobster. It kind of was on our minds because of one of my personal favorite quotes we got when we were doing interviews in Asheville from Kevin Frazier.
Right.
When he talked about Red Lobster opening being like the second coming of Christ. And then we were like, What about that Red Lobster? It's been a while since we've done a restaurant chain.
Yeah, and they're always such weird and fascinating social histories.
Yeah, and speaking of history, I have a lot of Red Lobster memories. For me, Red Lobster was the fancy restaurant my family went to when I was a kid. I literally put that on a survey once, like in fifth grade. We had to fill out, what's the nicest restaurant you've ever been to? I can't remember why, but I put Red Lobster. And my little brother, he used to get the mix and match combo.
Oh, yeah.
And he'd get three orders of fried shrimp and fries and a baked potato every time.
Oh, wow. That is, Oh, my goodness.
Yep. And whatever he didn't finish, he would have for second dinner on the car ride home because it was 30 minutes away.
Oh, wow.
So you had time. He had time to get hungry all over again.
Yeah, I guess when you have that many carbs at a certain point, you're just like, well, I'm hungry now.
I might as well just continue. And my older brother would order the most expensive thing on the menu. And I always assumed it was out of spite because he and my dad didn't get along. So I was like, of course he's going to order the most expensive thing on the menu. But who knows? Maybe he did really want the Admiral's platter. Mysteries of family history. And we would ask for a box of the Cheddar Bay biscuits to go before we left. And occasionally, if we were seeing a movie in the area, because that's where the closest movie theater was, we would stop by around 10 p.m. when they were closing to see if we could just get some biscuits, like, at the back.
Yeah, just be like, hey, do you have any biscuits you're throwing out? Can we just eat them?
Just throw them this way.
Could you just toss them directly into our mouths?
We'll take them. We usually succeeded. They would hand us some biscuits.
Oh, man.
And, yeah, all of that to say I have memories of Red Lobster. And I mentioned in our biscuit episode my dream one day is to return, buy their nicest bottle of red wine, and just eat the biscuits.
I wonder if there would be a surcharge for the biscuits if you didn't order any food.
I don't know.
Because they come free with meals.
Right.
But,
I'll have to put it to the test. I'll make a scene. I'm getting your most expensive bottle of wine. We'll see. I'll report back. And also, in the spirit of transparency, I did work at a Darden-owned restaurant, Longhorn Steakhouse, for a couple of years back for the span of 2 weeks. And I broke my foot, and I never returned, and I never got paid.
No.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, I mean, I never—
Well, sure.
It was sort of like I assumed the cost of onboarding me.
It was just sort of a wash at that point. You were like, well, no harm, no foul all around.
Yes. I just never showed back up. I'm a better employee now.
Yes. Yes. When you have injuries, you come in.
I do.
Possibly re-injuring yourself.
Sometimes.
Good job.
Thank you.
Darden, being the company that for a long time owned Red Lobster, they no longer do. But yeah, for decades, it was part of Darden's over 2,000-store empire, including Olive Garden and Longhorn, as you said, Bahama Breeze, Seasons 52, Capital Grille, all these chains like that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I've ever been in a Red Lobster.
What?
I think I did once after college, after I'd moved to Atlanta. There's a Red Lobster out in, like, Tucker.
Yeah.
And I went with my coworkers because my office was over there. Mm-hmm. But I think that is literally the first and only time that I've ever been in a Red Lobster.
Wow. We bring very different experiences to the table.
We do. I think I've mentioned my father was a cook or a chef or however you want to say it. And he had this, like, sort of personal grudge against Red Lobster, I think. And I'm not entirely positive why.
Mm-hmm.
He did have a friend who worked for the TGI Fridays chain. So, like, that might have been part of it. But I don't know. He would just get really mad about Red Lobster in particular. And something about, like, seafood sustainability and, I don't know, like, my grandmother suggested us go there a couple of times. And every time he would be like, we're not going there. You will not take my daughter into that place.
Not my daughter. Nay.
So, yeah. But no, I think that your experience is not entirely uncommon in the suburbs of America where these casual family chain restaurants are kind of the only option. If you are looking to have a celebratory dinner, you want to spend, like, more than McDonald's or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's either nothing available or nothing financially available that's better than something like Red Lobster.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're going to talk about that because Red Lobster had a heyday and it's sort of coming back into its own. And one of the reasons for that possibly is the Beyoncé effect. Because after her song Formation came out with the line, "If you rock me good, I'll take his ass to Red Lobster," the chain saw a boost in sales of 33%.
Which I love.
Me too. And I got to say, when that song comes on and I'm running, it's the equivalent of Popeye eating spinach.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Take off.
No, Beyoncé is a serious force effector.
She has effects beyond Red Lobster. She has many effects.
She does. It's true.
It's true. But this brings us to our question, Red Lobster. What is it?
Well, a Red Lobster is a chain of what's called casual dining restaurants, started and headquartered here in the United States, it is. And this category of restaurants offers full-service dining, like you sit down at a private table and a server or a team of servers takes your order and provides you with whatever else you request during the meal. But yeah, as I was kind of alluding to a minute ago, these restaurants offer that experience at prices that are aimed solidly at the middle class, like $20 to $40 per person for a complete meal. It's a sort of aspirational concept that came up in the late 20th century. It's meant to evoke fine dining for folks who do not have access to fine dining, while maximizing profits by taking cues from the fast food industry in terms of like leveraging this huge supply chain, like buying in bulk and creating these easy, replicable, highly dependable experiences across dozens or hundreds of stores. Like corporate designs the menu and figures out how to get the ingredients and like manufacture the elements of the dishes at this large scale so that a kitchen in Kansas and a kitchen in Georgia can create the exact same dish. And here in the United States, Red Lobster is not a franchise. Corporate owns and operates every store, which is honestly impressive.
Yeah, I did not realize that.
Yeah, no. And they specialize in seafood, if you didn't know that it's a seafood chain.
What a punk that would be to go into a restaurant and think, I'm going to get some lobster at this Red Lobster restaurant.
Nope.
Nope. Nope. No lobster here. That's just, we like how the character looks.
Right.
Does he have a name?
It's just Chicken. No, I think it's
his name is Chicken.
His name is Chicken. It's Chicken the Lobster.
Chicken the Lobster. That's clear. Clear as a mud lobster. Mud bug. We do have some Red Lobster numbers for you.
Oh, yeah.
There are around 58,000 employees working at over 700 Red Lobster locations, mostly in the U.S., but you can find some of these restaurants in Brazil, Japan, Canada, Mexico, Ecuador, Malaysia, Kuwait, Qatar, and United Arab Emirates, and Saudi Arabia.
In the United States, as of 2014, they were doing about $2.5 billion in annual sales, making them the fifth largest casual dining restaurant in the country, and the largest by far in terms of full-service seafood restaurants. The profits on that were something a little bit under like $150 million a year.
I love food industry terms. I think I've mentioned that before, but I love like casual dining restaurant. It's its own specific thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Don't put me in the same category as this thing.
As fast casual.
Yeah.
That's completely
not
different.
Not fast food either.
Don't
get it twisted. On average, Red Lobster restaurants bake a new batch of biscuits every 15 minutes. 1.1 million biscuits every day, about 395 million a year.
More on those Cheddar Bay biscuits later.
Oh, we got to talk about the Cheddar Bay biscuits.
Yeah.
I mean,
by the way, Cheddar Bay is not a real place. It's just a name.
What?
Yeah, sorry.
It's not like Cape Cod. It's like the reverse of Cape Cod.
It is.
Oh my goodness. Apparently, the endless shrimp is really endless.
Oh.
And this is a big draw to Red Lobster, you know, big marketing push where get endless shrimp. Two Business Insider reporters went into a Red Lobster in 2016 with the ultimate goal of getting their endless shrimp cut off. Over 8 hours, they dined 305 shrimp, and they got a bag of shrimp to go. The manager even offered them off-the-menu shrimp items and tips on digestion so that they could keep going. And Huffington Post tried the same thing a couple of years earlier, and they weren't cut off either. If you're curious, in 2012, you would have needed to eat about 100 shrimp, just 3 pounds, to get your money's worth.
Keep those shrimp coming. Endless Shrimp is back at Red Lobster with all the shrimp you want, any way you want them.
And no, your ears do not deceive you. That was a clip from a Red Lobster commercial.
Endless shrimp, very exciting.
Endless shrimp. According to a Darden representative, as of 2010, people in the United States consume about 15 to 17 pounds of seafood per year. If he was right, that's about 5 billion pounds total, of which Darden restaurants were peddling some 100 million pounds of.
But the most important number?
Yeah.
The number of times Nicki Minaj has been fired from Red Lobster.
Which is an unknown number, but apparently it's high.
Apparently it's high. According to her, every Red Lobster she could think of. She was known to chase customers who had taken pins out into the parking lot and accidentally leave her nails in food.
Press on nails. It's a hazard.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. Well.
Well.
With those important, we got Beyonce numbers and Nicki Minaj numbers in this episode. We're really cooking with some magic. I don't know. But this brings us to the history of Red Lobster.
And it also brings us to a quick break for a word from our sponsor, which is not Red Lobster.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
Our story starts with Bill Darden.
That Darden?
That Darden. I think. One of the Dardens.
Yes.
Yes.
Totally.
Who opened the Green Frog in Waycross, Georgia during the 1930s when he was only 19. It was a diner with a drive-up service, and it was very well received. Service with a hop was the slogan.
Oh, I get it.
Yep. And the restaurant specialized in traditional Southern dishes. During a time of racial segregation in the South, the Green Frog did not segregate. The Green Frog shut down in 1981, but you can still see artifacts of its existence, most notably the clothing boutique, the King Frog.
Yeah.
With the money he made from the Green Frog, Darden purchased the Howard Johnson franchise, which at the time consisted of about 20 properties. Hojo was not only the first restaurant chain that was both national and full service, it was also the country's most popular chain during the 60s and 70s. Darden wanted to open a seafood restaurant in Florida, and he did, with his business partner, Charlie Woodsby, in Lakeland, Florida in 1968. It was called the Red Lobster Inn, and the slogan was, Harbor for Seafood Lovers.
I like that he liked a pun.
I do, too. I think we might have gotten along. There are a couple of inspiration stories about where the name maybe came from. Either it was a play on the name The Green Frog, courtesy of the printer making the menus, as in the person who printed up the menus came up with it. Or according to Bill Darden's wife, Mary, it came up during a brainstorming session, and it had to do with the perfectly cooked lobster.
Ah.
The red.
The red lobster.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I like that Green Frog, Red Lobster. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a pretty immediate hit, and they grew to 5 locations across the South. Within 2 years, Darden and Woodsby sold the Red Lobster chain to General Mills, and they stayed on as board members. Woodsby went on to open Fishbones, which is different than Bonefish Grill.
Whole separate fish chain.
Whole separate fish chain.
Mm-hmm.
Red Lobster claims that you have them to thank for popcorn shrimp.
Oh.
Yes. Is this exciting news for you?
It's honestly so-so. But, I mean, it had to have come from somewhere.
It did, and they say it was from them. They also say that they came up with the first point-of-sale system and that they are also, they should get credit for introducing the American palate to snow crab and calamari.
Oh.
They're claiming that we owe them a lot.
Sure.
As far as that popcorn shrimp claim goes, Red Lobster says they introduced the popular food in 1974, but some dispute this and say we should be crediting Paul Prudhomme instead.
Yeah, we've talked about him before, the Cajun chef.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
In 1979, Red Lobster debuted their new slogan, for the seafood lover in you.
I remember that from television commercials from when I was a small child.
Red Lobster for the seafood lover in you.
I feel like I do, too. I feel like I do, too. Bill Darden retired in 1983, but stuck around and consulted for General Mills. And by 1985, there were over 400 Red Lobster locations. When Darden died in 1994, the company decided to spin off Red Lobster as part of a planned restaurant division, which they called Darden Restaurants, Inc. Olive Garden, Longhorn Steakhouse, Bahama Breeze, Capital Grill, Seasons 52, Eddie V's, Yard House, and Cheddar's Scratch Kitchen all fall under Darden restaurants. Olive Garden, which launched in 1982, now makes up 45% of Darden's sales.
Whew, that's a lot of breadsticks.
Yeah, that is a lot of breadsticks. I had one of my worst dates ever at an Olive Garden. I suppose if someone asks you, I don't know. Ugh, anyway.
I love that horror movies and horrific dates are the two things that your two landmarks for your food experiences.
It really solidifies in the memory what you were eating, the whole thing. He poured water on me as part of a...
What?
He was doing like a Jeff Goldblum bit from Jurassic Park.
Oh, no.
But he poured the entire glass of water on me.
Oh, that's not the sexy thing.
No, it was bad news. Anyway, moving on to good news, at least for me, them biscuits, though.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yes. We have to talk about Red Lobster's bread and butter, the Cheddar Bay biscuits. From Tina Fey's book, Bossy Pants, quote, "There is no one of woman born who does not like Red Lobster cheddar biscuits. Anyone who claims otherwise is a liar and a socialist." They are relatively new, though, gracing Red Lobster tables beginning in the early 90s, courtesy of one Kurt Honkins. Or Hankins? Honkins was asked to come up with a replacement for Hush Puppies, and his first idea was Texas toast, but that quickly turned to biscuits because they went well with seafood. They were first tested in Georgia, and they took off almost right away.
Their original menu listing, by the way, was apparently freshly baked hot cheese garlic bread.
Doesn't roll off the tongue the same way Cheddar Bay biscuit does.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Got that good alliteration and everything. In their current iteration, they are not, in fact, scratch-made in-house. They're about 150 calories each. An article about them in the Chicago Tribune in 2011 put it like this. Quote, "Natalie Dupree, the James Beard Award-winning author of Southern Biscuits, PBS staple and biscuit queen, told me, 'People have biscuit fetishes, and certain biscuits resonate for them. A biscuit can be terrible, but if it reminds that person of their grandmother, it doesn't matter. Hot biscuits mean comfort, an umbilical state.'" Which, I'm so sad that I didn't have that quote for our episode on biscuits.
That is a good callback for our biscuit episode, and also our nostalgia.
All right, yeah.
Comfort food episode.
Oh, but anyway.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. The 90s was Red Lobster's decade, when they were one of the key casual family dining restaurants. The chain gets some credit for introducing landlocked Midwestern states to types of seafoods and types of preparations that they perhaps weren't going to experience otherwise.
Absolutely. And this was really the era of the casual family chain restaurant.
Yeah. In 1998, Darden Group, which was the company that owned Red Lobster at the time, began funding efforts around lobster farming by the Australian Research Council. A whole 16 years later, researchers were able to raise lobsters in captivity. Darden also helped the Atlantic Lobster Sustainability Foundation get going, and it took part in the Global Fish, F-I-S-H, Alliance.
Part of these efforts included improved worker safety and training in certain fisheries, which in turn encourages better sustainability practices of wild populations of lobsters. Red Lobster also at that point stopped serving a number of at-risk fish and also stopped serving lobsters over 4 pounds, which are good for breeding.
Going back to raising lobsters in captivity thing, the company started the Darden Aqua Farm with a production goal of 40 million pounds of lobster a year by 2029. This was the first lobster farm of its kind. But since Darden and Red Lobster broke up, this project is on hold. Of note, too, the effort was not well received by Maine lobster fishermen, especially in light of how lobster would continue to be presented as Maine lobster. Yeah, on the menu. The aqua farm is off the coast of Malaysia, where you'll find spiny rock lobster instead. And then, in 2003, Red Lobster took a bit of a risk that did not pay off when they introduced Endless Snow Crab. They lost about $1.1 million a month while this promotion was going. That's in part because snow crab has a lot more regulations around it here in the United States. In the company chairman's words, "It wasn't the second helping, it was the third one that hurt." Mm-hmm. People are going to get their money's worth if they can around endless snow crab.
Endless anything, yeah. If you say endless, someone will take you seriously. It's not always just Homer Simpson.
Not always. Not always. In 2004, Darden took their arch nemesis to court.
Their arch nemesis?
One international house of pancakes.
I feel like this is a twist.
I didn't see it coming. No, I didn't. They accused IHOP of copying Olive Garden's all-you-can-eat pasta bowl promotion with their never-ending pancakes and never-ending popcorn shrimp promotions.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Big no-no in Darden's eyes. Darden's vice president of communications at the time called it very confusing for the consumer. We're very confused.
I've never been that confused by endless pancakes. I mean, I...
You mean endless?
I have gotten great entertainment out of their signs for never-ending pancakes because it's just the infinity symbol. It's like infinity pancakes.
Oh.
Like, that was definitely part of their promotional material when I was in college. And I was like, is it really infinity pancakes? I'm doubting your use of the word infinity.
Infinity pancakes would be a great screen name.
Oh, man, I bet it's taken.
I bet it is, but we should look into that after.
If not, one of y'all. around 2007 to 2008, facing changing tastes and a greater consumer emphasis on, like, health and freshness, we've talked about this before, Red Lobster introduced today's fresh fish menu. By fresh, they meant not, like, literally fresh, not, like, unfrozen, but just grilled rather than heavily sauced or sautéed.
Right.
Yeah.
In 2013, a joke story from the site The Rock City Times claiming one of their writers went into a food coma after eating 413 of the Cheddar Bay biscuits got picked up as truth in several tabloids and in some websites. Sort of like when people share links to The Onion not knowing it's satire.
Yeah. I mean, the paper bills itself as Arkansas's second most unreliable news source, so I don't know what the confusion was. Again, I don't know.
It's not the first most unreliable news source, but it's so unreliable, maybe it is the first most unreliable news source.
Always check your facts, folks.
Always check your facts.
But truthiness or not, it was around this time that the Great Recession had hit the middle class hard. The middle class, you know, being Red Lobster's biscuits and butter.
Mm.
They saw decreasing sales in 9 out of the first 13 years of the 21st century. And this was part of an overall trend of decline in these casual family, like, bar and grill type chains, and a rise in the cheaper, fast casual chains as the middle class struggled and kind of stratified. Fast casual, you know, like a Chipotle and Panera, Five Guys, stuff like that. As of 2014, the median household was lower income than it had been 20 years earlier. And lower-income consumers were switching to those fast casual places. Meanwhile, higher-income consumers were eating upward, away from stuff like Red Lobster. Red Lobster tried to win the middle class back with a few different pivots around this time. First, in 2012, they expanded their non-seafood, lower-priced offerings, and then, a couple years later, leaned way back into seafood and tried cutting back on some of those bargain-priced specials, those endless whatever kind of deals, hoping to increase perceived value.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Every time I hear the word pivot, I think of Ross from Friends just screaming, pivot! Does that ring a bell?
Not at all.
Okay, great. He's like trying to move a couch and it's on the stairs, you know.
Oh, I do remember that bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every time I hear that word, that's what I think of. Really stuck in my brain. In 2014, a bacterial disease and blight majorly decreased the shrimp output of the largest shrimp-producing countries, China, Thailand, and Vietnam. Prices tripled, and Red Lobster felt it.
Oh, yeah. Like, shrimp prices increased by over 60% in a single year. This cost Red Lobster about $30 million over the course of that year.
Yeah, and maybe because of these things, Red Lobster's parent company, Darden, sold the chain to Golden Gate Capital for a cool $2.1 billion that same year.
By the way, this seriously pissed off Darden's shareholders, who wound up voting out every single sitting board member in retaliation, like direct retaliation for this happening.
That they sold Red Lobster?
Yeah. Darden's shareholders were mad, like mad with a Y.
No, the biscuits!
And meanwhile, Golden Gate, which was a like private holding company, turned around and sold off $1.5 billion worth of Red Lobster's United States real estate assets pretty much immediately. They turned instead their focus to selling franchises of Red Lobster in other countries and have opened 22 since then.
2 years later, seafood distributor Thai Union Group PCL entered into minority ownership with Golden Gate Capital for almost $600 million.
It was one of those two-stage deals. Thai Union bought about 25% of the shares of Red Lobster outright, with another 24% to convert in the next decade. So by 2026, they will own 49% of the company. And a word here, friends, about Thai Union. They are the largest seafood supplier slash distributor in the world, including lots of supermarket brands like Chicken of the Sea. They provide canned and frozen seafood throughout the United States and Europe from fisheries all over the world. And in 2015, they were the primary subject of a Pulitzer Prize-winning Associated Press expose about slave labor, and particularly child slave labor in the shrimp industry. Thai Union did, upon the publication of this expose, really shake down their supply chain. They voided contracts with third-party shrimp processors and became the first Thai seafood company to ban the policy of recruitment fees for workers. Recruitment fees being this policy where workers, often immigrants who had few options and little support, would basically enter into, like, indentured servitude for the privilege of getting hired. You know, upside, it's great that they stopped doing that, and hopefully having a company of their scope stop those practices will make a significant impact in the industry. You know, downside, it took an expose to make it happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, so back to Golden Gate Capital.
Yeah, the sale led to a pretty substantial menu update, which in turn led to an increase in Red Lobster's popularity with those ever-elusive millennials. A survey found that it was rated the number one casual dining spot for folks aged 18 to 24.
And the company says that they weren't even targeting millennials. They were just trying to make improvements overall, like including preparing some dishes from scratch or near scratch in-house.
What?
Oh, like the scampi?
Oh, that was my favorite.
Well, I'm sure it's just better now.
Oh, no. I say that nostalgically. I'm sure it's better now. I mean, I was a kid who just liked all of the butter.
Well, the thing is, like, apparently this change came about partially because the cooks at Red Lobster restaurants wanted to add more sauce to plates after customers kept asking for extra sauce to dip their biscuits in.
I forgot. I did witness a lot of people do that.
Yeah. So I think, like, if you were really just after the sauce, like, they're just trying to give you more of what you wanted.
Well, maybe I'll have to rethink my dream of returning back to Red Lobster. Can I just get a vat of the sauce and some biscuits and red wine and no questions asked, please?
Can just a scampi vat, like a butter sauce vat.
Just ladle it out.
Can that be my meal? Oh, my goodness.
I'll pay top dollar for it.
Oh,
I feel
no.
Like this is revealing quite a bit about me. But scandal perhaps revealed quite a bit about Red Lobster.
And we will get to that right after we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with scandals. Scandal hounded Red Lobster in 2016 when a DNA test on their lobster bisque showed no Maine lobster, but instead, langostino, a cheaper, less popular variety of lobster. Red Lobster claimed both types of lobster were used, and it was, quote, the luck of the ladle.
Seafood fraud is not at all uncommon in the restaurant industry or even in the fishing industry. Anywhere in that supply chain, anyone from the people pulling stuff onto boats and selling it to restaurants or other second or third parties to the restaurant itself, purporting that whatever they are putting in their food is one thing when it's really another. It's pretty common. And that investigation that we're talking about by Inside Edition implicated several other brands. It wasn't just Red Lobster.
Yeah, I think I remember a couple years back when there was all these headlines about how you probably never had this type of sushi that you think you've had.
Oh, yeah.
It's just not that, but yeah. That's what it's labeled as.
Yeah.
So future episode for sure. A couple of you have written in about that.
Oh, yeah.
But in the meantime, we've got another scandal. And at 2015, Red Lobster received the dubious honor of unhealthiest dish in all of fast food, which, wait a minute, it's casual family dining. But anyway.
But anyway.
At 2,700 calories and 6,530 milligrams of sodium. If you're wondering, it was a particular combination of those create-your-own varieties.
Oh, okay.
You can really go all out there. And Red Lobster, in response, said, well, you can get healthier.
Yeah, you can get a side of broccoli with that. Like, you don't have to get scampi fries, popcorn shrimp.
Stop judging me, Laura.
Butter.
It was like, I think it's waltz shrimp. I don't remember what that is, but I know that was one of the options. In 2017, Red Lobster partnered with the Discovery Channel's reality TV show, The Deadliest Catch, creating an interactive experience for that year's Crab Fest and their special promotion of dueling crab legs.
Dueling crab legs.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means.
Red Lobster wanted to show the sea-to-table experience of their crab by doing this.
Huh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I love this. Deadliest catch. Watch these fishermen put their lives in peril and then go eat the crabs that they caught.
Yeah. Dueling crab legs.
Dueling crab legs. I don't know. Later in the year, Red Lobster relaunched their menu, yet again, to include more small and or shareable dishes and more dishes with a kind of varied flavor influences, Southwestern, Pan-Asian, Canadian. Yeah. They've got a version of poutine on the menu now. These cheese fries topped with clam chowder and fried clam strips. Apparently, they're ridiculous and delicious. I don't know.
Huh.
And yes, 2018, it brings us to 2018, and this is the 50th anniversary of Red Lobster existing.
Wow. And we just happened to do this episode.
I know. In January, Red Lobster announced an expanded commitment to serving only traceable, sustainable, and responsibly sourced seafood. A few months later, the company teamed up with Monterey Bay Aquarium's Seafood Watch program, which is this public service that tries to educate and influence both consumers and sellers of seafood about what products are safe to eat and what products are environmentally sustainable. This is increasingly valuable as a combination of overfishing and climate change have been totally destroying ocean ecosystems and putting lots of species at risk for extinction. And, like, I mean, it's great. I'm glad it's happening. It's also, it's essentially a giant corporation saying, we've been profiting off of immoral and illegal practices for decades by claiming ignorance to them, but we're stopping now, we really promise, and also we pinky swear that it's not only because millennials seem to care about this and we want their money. It's not that they've never tried and succeeded in making positive changes the brand has. I'll be less cynical about it when we see more of those positive changes. With great power comes great responsibility, y'all.
Lauren's Killjoy Corner.
Yep. It's not over yet, actually. Yeah, ooh. Because just, I wanted to say here that the environmental impact of the fishing industry and its exacerbation by climate change is this huge topic that really has to be considered species by species. You can't say something about how tuna are reacting to stuff and extrapolate that to how lobsters are reacting to stuff. But, like, overall, changes in temperature and weather patterns have meant that ocean animals are migrating differently, and some of their populations are really struggling. And the fishing industry and the restaurant industry need to work with organizations like Seafood Watch to understand what's changing, how they can catch wild fish without endangering the populations, and how to best keep farmed fish healthy for their sake as well as the consumer's sake. So,
yeah, for the planet's sake.
For the good of all of us.
Oh, yeah. This reminds me of something else. I feel like I've had a million pop culture references in this episode, which has surprised even me. But when I have this folder of favorites on my computer mm-hmm. that I watch when I'm having a rough time or I need to be cheered up, and they're in order of, like, how
cheeriness?
Bad is this day? And one of them, a recent recruit, is when John Mulaney hosted Saturday Night Live a couple months ago.
Okay.
There was this bizarre but hilarious skit where it was this guy ordered lobster in a diner.
Okay.
And the lobster comes out and it's Les Miserables.
Oh, my God.
But with lobsters. And it's excellent. And I've never seen Les Mis, and I was incredibly moved by the whole thing.
This, I am confused genuinely for the first time in this episode, but in a really delightful way.
Oh, when I was watching it, and the lobster comes out.
Yeah, That's a lot. I mean, that's great.
Oh, it was excellent.
I love some good absurdism, surrealism in comedy. So excellent. Yeah.
I highly recommend it. And of note, this episode was about Red Lobster, but not lobster. So we didn't get to talk about them.
Goodness. Yeah, that is a whole separate topic. And I know that we've covered crawfish or crayfish, however mm-hmm. you want to say it, which are similar, mm-hmm. but quite different.
Yes.
So yeah, lobster is a whole topic for a whole other separate day.
Yes.
And I'm really excited about it because they're so weird.
Yeah. And also, there's a lot of pop culture stuff about them. Like, was it In Defense of Lobsters? Oh my gosh. Yes. Dealing with the Wind. Consider the Lobster. And recently.
The Lobster.
The Lobster. Oh my gosh, The Lobster.
Yeah.
That was buried deep in my psyche. And all the news lately about giving them, is it THC, to see if they don't feel pain.
Oh, wow. I hadn't even heard about that part. Mm-hmm. Lobster's not one of my favorite foods. The only times that I've enjoyed eating them are when I've been in Maine and it has been extremely fresh.
Right.
Even if it's well prepared in another restaurant, I feel like it's just not, I don't like it. I'm just like, this is like crappy crab. Why am I bothering?
As a kid, another reference, I really wanted to try lobster bisque because Elaine has it in one episode of Seinfeld,
yeah. uh-huh.
and she equates it to being better than an orgasm.
Oh, wow. Ah, I see. Okay.
And so.
Yeah, you were like into it. You were like, yeah.
I've got to have the lobster.
Got to try the lobster bisque.
And I tried it. It was pretty good.
Yeah.
I tried it at Red Lobster, though, so maybe that wasn't the top, the best.
Sure, sure. There was that one time that I dressed up like a lobster.
That's right.
For a previous job.
It was the best.
I'm not going to say it was the best, but it was certainly an experience that I got a Christmas card out of.
Uh-huh. Yeah. No, it's excellent. I love this story of yours. We need to share it one day.
I think, I can't remember if we published it now or not.
I don't think we did.
Oh, okay.
It's there. It's from our Lexington road trip.
Oh, right. There you go. Yeah.
You told the story.
In the car, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go ahead and save that one for our actual lobster episode.
Okay.
And the accompanying photograph, although I'm sure that you guys could find it if you really wanted to.
So you have that to look forward
yeah,
to.
Yeah, yeah.
But in the meantime, we bring you listener mail. Who am I? I'm telling you, look up that skit. Look it up. Nick wrote, I love listening to your show and using the interesting facts shared to delight and amaze my wife and friends. Thank you, Nick.
Yeah.
One of my favorite episodes was the pineapple story and learning how fashionable they used to be in high society. Flash forward to last weekend where my wife and I went to Six Flags Great America, a theme park near Chicago, to go ride some roller coasters. There's a Batman coaster there, and the queue area is decorated as if the rich Wayne family had donated funds to a local park. Lo and behold, right in the center is a small water fountain adorned with nothing less than a single elegant pineapple.
Aww.
My wife and I were in awe of our first in-person example of something learned from the show. It added just a little more wonder to our day at the park.
That is delightful.
It is. And I love this because I am a huge roller coaster fan.
Yeah.
And the Batman at Six Flags Over Georgia is not decorated this way.
No, it's not.
You're like in the sewers, yeah. In the depths of hell.
Yeah, it's sort of like the scene in Batman Forever where there's all of those like Dayglow bikers.
I've never seen this.
Oh, that's right. Oh, there's these Dayglow bikers. And it sort of harkens to that. Oh, okay, yeah, film reference that you don't understand.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. It's like a sewer from hell.
It is,
yeah.
Especially in the summer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's an unpleasant. I mean, most sewers are probably unpleasant to be in the summer, but anyway.
Probably.
Nicole wrote, I just listened to your episode about biscuits and had to write. While the episode itself made me crave all the carbs, I'm actually writing about a comment you made about international KFCs. I'm originally from Santa Fe, New Mexico, but I am currently living abroad in Doha, Qatar. KFC is very popular out here, although many people refer to it as Kentucky. This led to a lot of confusion one day when my former boss, originally from Egypt, asked me if I wanted anything from Kentucky. This was a very strange question, so I replied, maybe some bluegrass and a racehorse? A lot of confusion ensued, but I eventually figured out she was referring to KFC. But the real reason I am writing is because the KFC in Doha does not serve biscuits or mac and cheese. They blasphemously give you a plain hamburger bun with your order. I really don't like KFC, and I only visit for the biscuits and mac and cheese, so this is very upsetting to me. However, Red Lobster opened here a few years ago. It is advertised as America's best seafood, which is upsetting for its own reasons, but it does have cheddar biscuits. However, it does not serve alcohol, which is even more upsetting to me now that I have heard Annie's dream.
This was very appropriate for this episode. Very timely letter to receive.
Absolutely. Yeah, especially super producer Dylan keeps telling us about this this lobster Rita.
Yes.
That he and his dear friend Barry have enjoyed at Red Lobster. And it's this red colored, I don't think it has lobster in it, but it's this red colored margarita that they serve in one of those glasses that are like legit the size of your head.
Yes.
And
it's a lobsterita.
Yeah. And apparently this is part of their new marketing program, too. Like, they're expanding their alcohol options.
Oh. What a night getting drunk at Red Lobster. I'm not opposed. I mean, my wine way is not, like, a much fancier way of getting drunk at Red Lobster. The last time I was at Red Lobster was a long time ago. I mean, probably, like, 5 or 6 years ago. And it was after one of those zombie races where you're running from zombies.
Yeah.
There was all of this mud. It became a mud race and it was an obstacle course. My friend and I were covered in mud. We went to Red Lobster. They seated us. They did not question us.
Oh, man.
And that was the first time I got alcohol at a Red Lobster.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds good for them being mud tolerant. That's sweet.
We tried to, like, we went into the bathroom and tried to
like, mop off.
Yeah. There's only so much you can do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But I love this story. I love that they call it Kentucky. That's really funny.
Yeah.
Thanks to both of them for writing in. You can write to us as well. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
You can also find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook @SaverPod. We do hope to hear from you. Thank you, as always, to super producer Dylan Fagan for his amazing stories about bowls of alcohol and also, you know, all the work he does here. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.
In 1998, Darden Group, the company that owned Red Lobster at the time, began funding efforts around lobster funding.
efforts around lobster funding.
We need to fund these lobsters.
With more funding.
It's a recursive funding.
Oh. Just picturing someone just like taking a lobster and going like, if you don't go to college, Jimmy, how are you going to make anything out of yourself? The lobster being like,
oh, man.